Blog Talk Radio.
Live to see it, friends. You're listening to Fast Forward Radio on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Fast Forward Radio is an audio production of The Speculist. You can find us online at speculist.com. That's S-P-E-C-U-L-I-S-T.com. Or go straight to the blog at blog.speculist.com. At The Speculist and on Fast Forward Radio, we are all about a convergence of emerging technologies and emerging possibilities which lie at the heart of this, the greatest period of transformation in human history. Our world is changing in ways that are difficult to predict, sometimes even difficult to imagine. And Fast Forward Radio is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead, and it will be here sooner than you think. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you?
Well, I am super fantastic. How are you, my friend?
Man, I am, to be quite honest, just a little bit wiped out from the day, but I'm turning it up, and I'm expecting you to be twice as interesting as normal, just to keep me awake, and we'll do just fine tonight. So
if I were twice as interesting as I typically am, that would put me right up there, I think, in the neighborhood of the guy in the Dos Equis ads. I'm pretty sure.
Oh, that's great.
I think I'm about half as interesting as that guy is, so, you know.
Or maybe Ben Stein. Oh, no, just kidding. I'm sorry.
Well, you know, I'm so, okay, on a scale from Ben Stein to that guy, I'm somewhere in there. That's all I'm saying. Right?
You're in the ballpark. Huh?
I'm right great. In the fat part of the curve, probably, between those two guys. As far as being interesting. Well, we'll try to keep it jazzy. We had a fun show last week talking about the shocking truth, talking about these three core transformations that kind of underpin all the other transformations we've been talking about. And we'll be revisiting those in weeks to come. But tonight I thought we would just sort of spin it back around and talk about some more possibilities, talk about some more good news. So we've got a number of those lined up, and I'm sure that others will occur to us as we go. But before we get into it, anything happening in your life that you want to catch us up on? Any interesting thoughts for the week, thoughts for the day, any of that sort of thing?
It's going to come to me, Phil, as the show progresses. But I'm quite serious. I have no memory beyond what just happened today. I mean, it's that kind of a day. If that makes any sense. I mean, just absolutely.
You do remember that large financial commitment you made to me earlier. I'm sure
that... You know, that slipped my mind, too, somehow. I should say that my coffee shopification post from The Speculist, it's going to be picked up by the Boston Globe, and so I'm looking forward to...
Well, there you go. See, I knew we had something big to talk about. That's right.
Yeah, that's going to be fun to see.
So the Boston Globe is running that piece on coffee shopification of everything. When can we expect to see that, and where on their site is that going to be, or is it going to be published in the paper, actually?
It'll be in the paper and also available online, and it'll be in an edited-up version. I imagine that they're going to do their very best to make me sound intelligent and then run it. So it's going to be a little bit different from what was at The Speculist, and I imagine it's going to be probably – either late this week or early next week. As soon as I know, I'll put something up at The Speculist pointing to it. So that'd be
absolutely
fun.
Be sure to. Well, we're gonna make sure we pull out all the stops on that one. We'll talk about it here, and hopefully we'll just link it all around on Facebook. I'll put something up on Transparency Revolution. We'll make sure the word gets out that that's kind of a big deal that a Speculist post has made it to the Boston Globe. I think that might be our biggest mainstream thing ever, really, because
we've had stuff that's been carried over to...
Go ahead.
I'd have to say your inclusion on that panel, remind me of what the place was and what y'all were talking about. That was Life
Comic-Con,
Extension.
Yes. I was at Comic-Con. Talking about the H+ the digital series. That's true. Okay. That was a big one too. But as far as repurposed speculist content, I think you've taken the lead.
As far as a post at the speculist, that's probably our big one so far. So, anyway, we'll have to up our game because we haven't been writing quite as much there as we once did, and perhaps we can get that one going again. But yeah, that'd be fun. Anyway,
we need to with people picking them up like this. I mean, this is
if we're going to get some attention, that'd be great.
Absolutely.
I noticed that Ken was Ken mentioned in the chat room just a little, right before the show that he's been working out, he finishes up his workout right before the show, and then he's he gets his mental workout, I guess, after he does his physical workout. But you're saying we don't need to do that anymore? Is that right?
Well, here we go. I mean, I'm on the record not officially saying that yet, but if you read the article, it's pretty intriguing. This new pill, purportedly, that can help you stay fit without exercise. That was the headline over at The Telegraph, and we don't even know for sure that it could come in pill form, actually, as we delve into the article. But it's very interesting, a potential treatment for obesity and for related health problems that people have, high blood pressure, blood sugar problems, cardiac problems, just a whole host of respiratory tract, and just all the stuff that exercise often addresses can be addressed through this pill. Basically, it's a hormone, and it's something that is naturally found in muscle cells. And if you inject it into mice, it provides the same basic chemical reaction inside them as if they had exercised. So it's like skipping the exercise to get the benefit of the exercise. One of the things that I found really interesting about this as I'm reading it is a couple of things that were really interested. It seemed to go to work immediately on these mice blood sugar levels and their ability to deal with blood sugar, which I found quite interesting. And those who have been following recent research and a lot of the discussion that goes on around low carb dieting and the paleo diet and a lot of these other ideas that have kind of taken hold here in the last few years, recognize how crucial blood sugar and insulin seems to be to the management of weight. That seems to be kind of the keys to the kingdom there when you're talking about managing weight. So it goes to work on that, but it does some other interesting things too. It turns white fat into brown fat, and this particular article over at The Telegraph, the one that I linked at The Speculist, spends an awful lot of language talking about white fat and brown fat without ever really exactly explaining what these two things are, why we have two of them. One thing that it does kind of mention as an aside is that the distinction between brown fat, which is much better at being burnt off and regulating body weight, than white fat, which just wants to kind of stay there, is that distinction is some kind of holdover from remote ancestors of ours who used to hibernate. And I guess the white, slow to break down, slow to digest, would stay on your body kind of fat, the kind that we tend to accumulate on our bodies as we get older, particularly in middle age and older, is that hibernation sort of fat. It's the kind of fat that you have a much harder time getting rid of. Well, this... I think it's called irisin, something like that, hormone will actually start turning white fat into brown fat, brown fat being the kind that can burn off much more easily. So it's not a, like, weight loss pill per se. It's not a weight loss treatment per se. The mice that were treated with this, and, this is like rush to publication with preliminary results on one test of this stuff, so we can expect to see a lot more discussion about this in the weeks and months to come. But those mice did not show a huge weight loss. They showed a slight weight loss. They lost some weight, but all these other markers improved tremendously. So you've got much healthier mice. And one of the things that's really interesting about that is if you read Gary Taubes' Why We Get Fat and, you know, I think a number of other treatments on the subject of exercise that have been made available lately, it's that exercise on its own actually is not a very good way to lose weight, and it's not a very good way to remove fat. It almost always has to be done in conjunction with something else. It has to be done in conjunction with primarily with changes to diet for there to, you know, for there to be any hope of it being effective. So all of this I find extremely interesting. What I find even more interesting is, what's your take, Stephen? I don't know, you probably didn't have a chance to read the article, or unless you had seen it earlier. It was making the rounds probably about a week ago.
I've been following it a little bit. First I got to say, exercise addresses just about every problem of modern life, every mm-hmm. health problem that people start tending to have, particularly Americans, but really, you know, the entire developing world, or developed world now. You tend to have heart disease, diabetes, type 2 diabetes, all these problems. You know, exercise addresses and helps treat all of these issues. And so if they come out with a pill that give you most of the effects, or the good effects of exercise, then that's wonderful. It would tend to help pretty much all the syndrome X problems that people have. And the other thing I'll just point out is that this particular hormone does not help you build muscle. I found that interesting. It gives you the benefit of exercise, but does not give you increased muscle. So I guess if you wanted to, come up with a treatment, I guess that, you know, makes you look like a bodybuilder, but never touch a weight. This isn't it yet. And this plus myostatin inhibition, when we have treatments for that, you get all the benefit of working out. But quite frankly, I think, you know, what could really help is that you start giving this to, you know, a bunch of middle-aged folks that don't, you know, they just don't feel like going out and exercising. You know, they're sitting there on the couch, you know, kind of feeling kind of run down from the day, a little bit like I feel after my day today.
Right.
And so they just can't quite get it together to go work out. They start taking these pills, you know, a few weeks later, hey, you know, let's get out and do something. You know, they start feeling better, and then they start exercising for real. It could be kind of a gateway drug to the real thing, which, you know, real workouts. So, you know, I find it fascinating, and I think these guys are on the right track. I'm looking forward to seeing how this develops.
I love the phrase gateway drug, right?
Yeah.
It's a gateway drug to your own endorphins that you'll get from doing a proper workout. I think it's a great idea. I think you make a really good point that exercise is almost an elixir. It's almost a wonder drug. Glenn Reynolds has often written, if it was a pill, everybody would take it. And now it's like,
right.
Oh, wait, now maybe it's a pill. And if it is, I think
everybody
he's right. I think he's got a good point. But there's different kinds of exercise, and you make a really good point that this doesn't build your muscle. So I'm assuming then that the type of exercise it emulates is more the cardio type.
Apparently. I guess so. Yeah. I guess so.
All kinds of benefits.
Some people would say, well, you know, can't you just get the benefits of a cardio exercise by just, popping caffeine? it speeds up your heart. No, it's not the same. This is a step ahead of that. So, anyway.
Well, what about this argument? Here's the one I expect to see, because we had this discussion a few weeks ago around curing obesity. And this would not cure obesity, but it might be part of an elixir that would help. I think if you had this and maybe something that controls insulin levels or that blocks carbs in going into the diet, and you had myostatin, you would have like perfect body in a bottle, right? And people could take that and they would be healthy and thin and, you know, vibrant and all the things they want to be. Now, the argument is, here comes the argument. This was the argument that we ran into around curing obesity, and I would expect you'll see the same argument here, which is, no, people need to work for it. They need to earn it, right? people are too lazy. This is a lazy fix. And don't take a pill. Go out and really exercise. How do you respond to that?
I think that it's going to be hard to put, you know, the hot body in a bottle like you suggested, Phil. And I'm not saying that you're really saying it's going to be that easy to do. I think there is something to be said about actually getting out and exercising. But again, people are really sick, with real health problems related to, you know, lack of exercise. And come on, let's treat the problem. And then as they get well, then maybe they'll feel like actually getting out and exercising. We'll deal with the lazy problem, later. Let's deal with health right now. Is my thought on that. So, yeah.
I think the lazy problem is a little bit misplaced anyway. I mean, we talked about it in terms of obesity, where it's like, okay, well, we need to punish people for being lazy, so we're going to let them die of heart attacks and, colon cancer and all the other things that are associated with
obesity. Pretty cold-hearted to say that,
Yeah, I'm not going to – I'm personally not ready to make that leap. But when you start to say, well, there's a natural way to make your body produce these same effects rather than taking a drug, so why not go the natural way? Well, there's a couple of responses to that. One is, this is the chemical your body naturally produces when you exercise, and it's the thing that then triggers all the benefits, right? And so, like, exercise produces this stuff, you get the benefits. So it's like, okay, or just take some of this stuff and get the benefits. So in a sense, you actually are doing it the natural way. You've left part of the formula out. But
I can tell you that there are people. What I do primarily in my day job, Bill, is personal injury attorney, and so I'm around people all day long that are, many of them, very injured. Often it'll be something like three or four herniated discs in the low back, things like that. And one of the first things their doctor will say was, "Well, you need to lose some weight. That will help you." And they're sitting there going, "Well, all I do all day long is sit on the couch in excruciating pain.
Right.
How am I supposed to lose weight? Exactly what exercises are available to me? And I suppose water aerobics, maybe something real low impact, might help. But for the most part, traditional exercises are out of the picture. Treatments like this could really aid people that are, are disabled in one way or another. And, if the people that would say this is just a terrible thing, it ought to be a banned drug, consider at least those people, and then the rest of us lazy slobs, we get to glob on.
I'm with you, except for the rest of us lazy slobs. We got to come along for the ride, all right?
I intend to come along for the ride. I'm on that bus, man.
I enjoy going out recreationally riding my bike. I take no pleasure whatsoever in going and riding a stationary bike at the gym. Right? One is fun. One is drudgery. Arguably, I can get about the same level of benefit from both, but right now is not the time of year I can do the former, which is my choice. So, I mean, there's other alternatives, and there are other things I can do. But I'm saying if consistently throughout the year I could take a supplement, I could inject into my body something that my body produces itself in order to acquire those benefits, which are so across the board and so good for me, I would not hesitate to do so. Anyway, I've got the final clinching argument about, if there's a natural alternative, why would you ever choose something else? To anyone who takes that position, I just say, do you live in a house or some other artificial structure? And if not, why don't you just avail yourself of the natural protection from the elements that, nature provides, right? You can live in a cave, there's trees, there's all kinds of natural alternatives to housing. Are you lazy? Is that it? You're just so spoiled by our, and to me, it sounds outrageous, but I think ultimately it's the same kind of argument. We don't live in that state of nature. Our ancestors worked really hard to make nature our you know, our accessory for us to build applications of nature that make it do nice things for us.
I really thought you were going to just come out with a B word just then. But
you know, I really didn't. That's not where I was going, but that occurred to me as I was formulating that sentence. But that's not what I mean. Nature's not our bitch. Nature's our friend, right? Nature's this really cool set of technology that we work with. I don't see it as subservient in that way at all. I didn't mean to go in that direction. I love what Jazz says. He says, have you seen this? Make fat people wear boxing gloves all day. Here's the ultimate solution to weight loss. I got two things to say about that, Jeb. All right. First off, you have no idea how much food I could still shove into my face while wearing boxing gloves. Okay, so I don't think it would be nearly as effective.
The portions actually would get larger. You know, I mean, you have to pick up big food.
Yeah. That's right. You can't be very fine grained with a boxing glove on. The other problem there is, I think if I'm wearing boxing gloves, I'm just going to be all that much more inclined to take a swing at somebody, and I'm going to be really irritated because I'm having a hard time eating. So.
That's great. Sally says the whole line of reasoning she says is similar to the if the Lord meant us to fly, he would have given us wings argument. And of course, the response to that argument is, well, if the Lord meant us to stay on the ground, he wouldn't have made us this smart. You know, so
there you go.
So exactly. Again, we're just using our brains to do what we need to do to make life better. So yeah, I think we can lay that one to rest.
All right. Well, then let's move on. How about this quieter and less damaging approach to wind power? Did you get a chance to take a look at that?
Yeah, I think that's pretty cool. And I think folks in the chat room, y'all need to check out the picture here. It looks like 100 foot stalks of what, grain or maybe blades of grass, but they're 100 feet tall.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. What can you say about
very tall trees, very tall, like willow reeds or grass, blades of grass, but I think it says they're like 180 feet tall, so hugely tall. And as they rock in the wind, as the wind pushes them from side to side, you capture that kinetic energy, you turn that into electricity, same way you do with the rotor on a windmill. The difference being you don't get that noise. You can concentrate this much closer. You can put a lot more of these into a small space than you can windmills. And according to this, I'm having a hard time accepting this, but according to this, each one of these just tall stalks is able to generate probably about as much energy as one of those big rotors that you see. So, you'd be getting a lot more energy.
Yeah, it seems to me it has to be related to the fact that it's moving more than just, you know, if you think about those huge windmills, Phil, they're a couple of hundred feet tall. They're real tall, and the only thing moving is the blade, right?
Yes.
This the whole structure is moving, right? So maybe the fact that maybe that's part of the deal is that it's moving, and it's not just moving at one joint. It's like the whole thing is flexible, and so it's recovering energy throughout the entire structure of it. So maybe that's part of it. I think it looks neat for one thing, and they apparently work real well close together, unlike windmills. Windmills have to, you know, because they're on what do we call it? They have a wake. And you can't,
right,
and you
yeah.
have to position.
Well, yeah,
just
if one windmill's catching all the wind, you can't have another one too close to it because it won't get the same oomph from the same blast of wind, right?
Apparently, these things work just fine. I mean, right up next to each other, which I think is pretty cool. And so they put them on these huge platforms, and you know they say that could be turned into public space down below. These platforms underneath. So. All a very cool idea, but, you know, I was looking at that and said those platforms, Phil, could be solar panels. You get, if you're really trying to maximize the amount of renewable energy you were getting from one piece of property, maybe you could have the solar panels at the base and then have these things waving in the wind. You know, maybe turn them into and turn those stalks into solar towers also, and then you got something, right? So.
Absolutely, I think it's a great idea. I wonder if the motion of those would create a downward draft that would make it less like make the solar collector less good at warming up and collecting heat? I'm just, you know, I don't know enough
lots
about
of
it.
Shadows. So. If you got a bunch of them together, I would assume there'd be a little bit of a shadow effect.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about the draft, if that would have anything to do with, you know, your ability to collect solar. Anyway, it's a cool idea, and I'd look forward to seeing that implemented somewhere. I just, you know, Sally says it looks like, you know, modern art. Yeah, it's exactly what it is. It's you know, art that that's useful. I think that's
yeah,
very cool.
Yeah, it is like a kinetic sculpture. It really would look cool. Although I have to say, if you've ever seen a big field full of those windmills, they look pretty cool too. I'm going to give them some give them some credit there too. One of the things that I also found interesting about this was apparently, according to the article, they'd be completely quiet, which I have a hard time picturing because I think of these 180-foot things swaying in the wind, and you just imagine it, you know, humming or making making some kind of chopping sound or something. But assuming these guys
metal,
know what they're talking about.
If they were made out of metal, you can imagine them screeching. You know, that wouldn't be great. Obviously, they have to be made out of some sort of composite or something if they're going to be completely silent. But anyway, I look forward to seeing it. It's going to be that's cool. Another kind of interesting thing about it, it has this light on the top of them. You know, at least in concept, you know, I guess you're losing a little bit of your power that way, but I guess you kind of have to protect airplanes and things like that. And I imagine that would look interesting as you're walking underneath it, and particularly at night. You see all these waving lights above you.
Yeah, it'd be pretty cool. The lights apparently indicate the level of wind, right? So they're much brighter if the wind's blowing hard, and if they're not, it's not blowing so hard, they grow dimmer. Although, to your point, those lights have to be on all the time in terms of keeping airplanes from flying into them and things like that.
Yeah.
I also wonder, just from an environmental standpoint, are these any easier on birds than the windmills are? I didn't see anything about that in the articles.
They would have to be, Phil. I mean, if they're just kind of waving in the wind like, you know, a tree or something, I can imagine a bird just landing on top of one of these things and kind of just swaying back and forth with it, you know. Kind of a much more natural movement.
Yeah, I guess those windmills, they just kind of get sucked into them, don't they?
Yeah, they do. They're just flying along and whack, they get hit.
Yikes.
So, yeah.
Good question from Ken. Wouldn't they hit each other? They look to me in the picture like they would, but presumably their flexibility tolerances would be gauged to the point that they'd be exactly close enough to each other that even a very strong wind would never quite push one into the other, I presume. Because you would think, if nothing else, they'd make noise if they were hitting each other.
Right. Yeah. And So, I don't know. That's a great question. And I just want to see it implemented.
Yeah, me too. I'm looking forward to seeing that. I'm looking forward to seeing other interesting ideas that come along on things to do with wind. I particularly like this one because it's this feels new. I mean, the windmill's been around for a long time. Hundreds of years we've had windmills. Don Quixote was written in like 1600, and there were windmills mentioned in that book, right? And I mean, I don't know when they were invented, but for hundreds of years we've had that same basic design of the wind pushes a rotor, and you get you get some mechanical energy originally out of that, and you can do something with it. You can work a pump, or you know, you can turn a turbine and make electricity. Now here's a completely new concept. Here's a new way to capture wind energy. I think that's really cool. Okay, our next item. We need to talk about SOPA and its twin. What's it called? PIPA, I think, is the
PIPA. Yeah, but SOPA is Stop Online Piracy Act, and the PIPA, I think, is Protect Intellectual Property Act. And both—that's noble goals. You know, I mean,
who could be opposed to those things, right?
I
believe in protecting intellectual property and stopping online piracy. Therefore, I'm ready to sign up for those.
Yeah, I'm out my chest as a, you know, as once I'm a published author in the Boston Globe. No, I'm going to be
well,
on
that's
the
right.
Side of it.
You just got to sit back and collect those royalty checks for the rest of your life.
For the rest of my life, right? Yeah, I'm on the
and
beach
just
now.
Make sure nobody's like copying your article and you sue them, right?
That's right. So that's the way I intend to spend my days for the rest of my life. Actually, I'm going to tell you, it's the problem. You know, these particular acts are just horrible. I mean, the power it gives to shut down, you know, it's just it's insane. First, they black. You know, the first order of business, if these were, acts were to be passed, would be to blacklist foreign websites that are, you know, are infringing on copyrights, and that, you know, which again sounds pretty noble. You know, we've had a problem, particularly with places like China, just absolutely stealing Hollywood movies and selling them over there and things like that, and music and everything else. But you know, what you end up doing is you shutting down whole websites over, you know, a perceived infraction. You don't have to go to court to do this. And in fact, there's encouragement within these acts for you know, owners of, you know, of IP addresses and things to shut down, say, a particular blog just on the suspicion that there might be something, and that they're to be insulated from any liability for shutting someone down, even if they were innocent. So I mean, that's what we're talking about here. It's just,
yeah, it looks
real
draconian. Yeah,
yeah. Shutting if implemented the way it's written, it would just absolutely shutter whole sections of the internet. It's just not a good idea at all. So, how do you feel about it?
You and I hadn't talked about this before the show, and I said let's not, because we'll see if we're on the same page, and we're on exactly the same page. I mean, one of the things that is most disturbing to me about SOPA is the possibility, depending on how you read it, that a blog like The Speculist could be shut down. You know, we could be shut down just for putting the wrong picture up, or
My coffee shopification post had a picture of from The Incredibles. You know, Bob Parr sitting at his desk. You know,
right.
That is
now, obviously, traditionally all of that sort of thing was fine because that was considered fair use, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's just fair use. That's I'm not posting the movie for somebody to come download it and watch the movie. If anything, you know, people reading my article and seeing that picture of Bob Parr sitting at his desk, you know, they might chuckle and say, you know, it's been a while since I've seen that movie. I think I'll go rent it or buy it. You know, I mean, it's a good thing for the copyright holders that
right.
people use pictures from something like that. Anyway,
but it goes farther than that. It's not just if you have a picture, you might just link to the wrong site and then you're in trouble.
Yeah.
I mean, there's almost this, it's almost this blacklist kind of thing, like during the communist witch hunts, right? Where if you were associating with people who knew people who were communists, right? You could be in trouble. So suddenly you're giving a tremendous amount of authority to squelch speech. Concentrating that into a few hands, there's all kinds of commercial interests at stake here, and people who are vying for these powers to be enacted are, you know, they're rent seekers. They're looking to protect their income stream. Understandable. Nobody blames them for wanting to do that, but this is a power grab beyond my ability to sympathize even with things that I care about, like, you know, stopping piracy and protecting intellectual property, because I do think those things are important. I mean, you can't have a vibrant film business unless you can somehow protect those things.
You know, but that is something that is of secondary importance to the marketplace of ideas.
Hmm.
The first and most important thing is that marketplace of ideas, the ability for – you know, me to say something completely idiotic and then have the ability to say it regardless of how stupid it is and put it out there, and then for everybody to, you know, come along and shoot it down. You know, and what if I had the power to shut down people who disagree with my idiotic idea? You know, I don't like being disagreed with. That's, you know, that, you know, you've hurt my feelings. You're shut down. You cannot, you know, you cannot even link to my article, and in your website, because you're saying something negative about what I've said. Now, I, you know, that's not exactly what SOPA is all about, but you could see it being abused that way very easily. You know, primary concern, and it's always, you know, it's pretty much been from the founding of our nation that freedom of speech is a primary concern, because we need to be, put it this way, a society that has free speech is much less likely to resort to violence. We can say what we want to say, and we can argue it out that way instead of arguing it out with guns and, you know, and in other ways. It's a pressure release on society, and we have to have it. And so, no way would I support SOPA or PIPA as written. Yeah, again, intellectual property, that's great, but it's secondary to keeping the intellectual marketplace wide open.
Right, because ultimately, the intellectual property doesn't mean much if you don't have the freedom of speech. You're absolutely right, Stephen. That's the foundational thing. That's the thing you got to protect. It's a principle in law anyway, that it's better to let a guilty man go free than to imprison an innocent man, right? I mean, that's the risk here, is that recognizing that the way things are set up right now allows for some abuses. You've got to be very careful how you remedy those. And if you're just remedying abuses, great. But if you're putting ridiculous powers concentrated into a few hands with aims that are not clear, and the ability to really shut down, I mean, it would just be such a dampening effect even before people started getting shut down. I mean, a lot of people would just probably close up shop because why bother, right? I mean, who wants to mess with it? There would be this climate of fear around publishing, I think, if SOPA were to be put in place. And I think, you know, people who are blatantly pirating material, you know, or making, particularly those who are like making a profit off it, you know, they should be afraid, and someone should come after them. But the whole blogging movement, right, the whole social media movement, this whole incredible thing that's happened over the last decade, you don't want to go dismantling that at its, you know, at its core. You want to find a way to stop piracy, to protect intellectual property, and allow that to continue, because that's part of our overarching accelerating trend. I mean, that's part of our the world's getting better process that we see happening. And for all the, you know, for all the damage that's happened, the movie business still seems to be doing pretty well. The music business has taken a pounding, but it seems to me that they've taken as big a beating from legitimate distribution of MP3s as they have from piracy.
It's their world has changed, and it changed fast. And it was hard for some of the old, some parts of the old network to survive the change. I realize that's real people with real jobs that lost their jobs and stuff. But hey. We've got to keep for freedom of speech. That is a foundational concern. That is first and foremost. And then once we have that within the bounds of maintaining that freedom, protect those who, are producing intellectual property so that they will continue to do so, and we all get to reap the benefits of that intellectual property. Yeah, that's great. Let's do that. But we have to have freedom of speech. That's just, can't do without that.
We got to have it. Absolutely.
Right.
Jab points out in the chat room that kids now buy ringtones and games. It's true. There's a lot of free stuff available, but the hip, fun, hot stuff to have, particularly like smartphone apps, iPhone apps or Droid apps. Those are commercially purchased. The real wave has actually been back towards people paying for stuff. The content is more likely to be bought now, I think, than content accessed over the web. I bet if you could somehow do statistics on this, is probably more likely to be paid for today than it was 5 years ago. And 5 years ago, more likely than it was 5 years before that. I think the trend has probably been very much in the direction towards legitimate business. Part of the problem was there just weren't good distribution models, and there weren't good payment models that supported the way things needed to work. And we've gotten better and better at that. I mean, who would pirate a movie. I assume some people do, but I would not like go download a movie from some dodgy site that might load my computer with malware when I can go to Netflix for $7.99 a month and have thousands of movies, right?
Right.
The business models now allow for people to make money to pay for content and for there to be plenty of content for everybody. It's an interesting maybe early instance of what post scarcity looks like. And post-scarcity is hard on some sectors, and maybe post-scarcity is being a little hard on the traditional structure of the music industry. But I don't think the problem is that people are criminals and that technology is going to allow everybody to get away with murder all the time. I think that the premise probably doesn't recognize the way the trend is going. Having said all that, I still think that reasonable protection should be put in place,
Let me add one thing about the music business. The reason we have these protections in place, again, is so that people will, put that material out there and we all get to enjoy the music. So my question to anyone who would criticize today's music business as opposed to a music business from 10 or 15 years ago, I would just ask them, is there more or less music now? Is there, do we have more choices in what we listen to, or do we have fewer choices?
Right.
And, across the board, there's more music. We all these different genres that, I have popped up because now you don't have to be a band that appeals to everybody. You can be a band that appeals to, one little segment in some, area of Seattle or something. You could be just playing for the people in that little small segment, whatever your niche is. And so music is sort of it's fractured in the sense that there's all these different options now. And so, hey, music is better now. There's more of it, and it's more interesting. So
I'll go you one more than that. You also have more people making money producing music than you did before.
Yeah.
Before you had a few people making a whole lot of money, kind of owning the distribution of music. Now you've got a lot more artists who can make money from their music than was ever possible before because the system has been opened up.
And they're making a decent living. They're not getting rich, but they're doing what they love to do. And so it's possible now to live a middle class lifestyle. I agree completely. In the old days, you either hit it big and were Madonna or somebody like that, or you were a nobody and couldn't make any money at all. And to some extent, that was pretty the case to some extent. Now it's a lot easier just to do what you love and get paid something.
Exactly.
I agree.
Exactly.
Yeah. Cool.
So there you go. Well, we're on the same page. And anyway, the good news here is it looks like SOPA is dead. I would say after today, SOPA is dead. It sounds like the phones have been ringing off the hooks, metaphorically speaking. But Congress critters have been emailed, barraged with people telling them that they won't stand for this.
It's across the board ideologically. Some of the most liberal people I know and some of the most conservative people I know are walking arm in arm, lockstep on this deal. Do not
right.
do it.
So
it's across the board. Anybody understands what it would mean, it's against it. So unless you consider yourself one of the elite that wants to be able to control everything, it's a bad idea for the rest of us.
Well, when you think about it, it goes back to what you said before, that we're talking about a foundational thing. You can be really liberal, really conservative, and still think free speech is a great idea, that it's
right.
something that we have to protect above other interests. And,
let's say you're on the extremes. You're liberal or you're real conservative. Who's going to be most concerned that the other side's going to shut down what they have to say?
Right.
Somebody in the middle? No. The people in the middle are not all that concerned.
They'll be good, right? They're, their point of view will probably still be there. That's a good point.
But if these guys out on the fringe that would have the most to fear by something like that, if political speech was to be attacked. And so, yeah, you can imagine, MSNBC and Fox News and Rush Limbaugh and Keith Olbermann, they're the ones that are going, hey, wait a minute, we don't want that, we don't want the other side to say what it is that we can or can't say.
Yeah, people who've already thought about the possibility that somebody might hit them with the kill switch, right?
Exactly.
They've got that in common.
Yeah.
There you go.
Pretty cool.
All right, well, next up, we've got the 16-acre farm on a single residential lot. This is what I've linked to is pretty much a press release from this company called Verticrop, but I love their thinking. I mean, we've talked about this urban vertical farming concept before, and I think we're agreed this is a cool idea. These guys have taken it up a notch. They're doing doing a hydroponic vertical farming with a kind of a assembly line approach. They're moving these things around. I think optimizing sunlight. They're feeding just the right amount of nutrients into them. And according to this article, which feels to me like it got lifted straight from the press release, but we'll take their word for it here for sake of discussion. You can grow about 16 acres worth of produce on a standard commercial lot using this approach. Now, the picture that's shown in the linked article does not look to me like it would produce those kinds of yields. I'm thinking that this thing would have to be much, much more vertical than what's shown here. I'm thinking multi-story, right? If you're talking about a standard commercial lot that's going to give you 16 acres, you've got to be talking about a 6, 7, 8-story building at least, in my opinion. But this is interesting because this kind of harkens back to what we talked about either last week or the week before when we talked about that exoskeleton. Because that was a great instance of wacky sci-fi idea, people in exoskeletons, which we've talked about on the blog and which we've talked about on this show as being future technologies that has now become a commercial reality. And here's another one. These guys are in this business, okay? We've talked about vertical farming as a concept, a couple, 3 years ago. Now, here's a company that is in the business of setting people up with equipment for doing vertical farming. It's a business now. It's something that you can actually do. And this article actually bears the imprimatur of the U.S. Farmers and Ranchers Alliance. Now, a couple of thoughts that come to mind when I look at this is, one, is there a short-term argument for this? Do we really need this right now? Are we running out of farmland? Do we need to be converting, abandoned warehouses into farms? That's my first question. What do you think?
Well, some areas of the globe need this a lot more than other areas. Places like Australia, where water can be very hard, fresh water can be hard to come by. Mm-hmm. They're talking about with this type of vertical farming, what you're doing is you're putting water at the top level, and it's filtering through the plants, watering the plants, taking nutrients to the roots, and then it drops down to the next level of plants below it, and that's the same. It keeps going all the way down, and then when it drops out of the very bottom tray, it's recycled right back into the system. So for 8% of the water, you're getting 8% of the water of normal, cropland, you're getting that kind of yields, and so that's very much necessary there. Also, in crowded places like think of Tokyo, any place in Japan, they don't have acres and acres and acres that they can farm. So typically what happens is they bring food in and it at a premium. It costs money, much more money. So you can imagine turning a few skyscrapers in Tokyo or in Hong Kong or crowded places on the globe into food factories that could provide for much of the city. And imagine how cheap that would be by comparison to trucking food in. Another thing, what about when we you know, we're in outer space when we actually do get to the moon and we go to the moon to stay. You know, can't be bringing in food all the time. That would be just a little expensive. You need to be able to grow food there or on Mars or
out in space,
mining the asteroid fields, you need food, and so this could be a way of doing it, and I suspect this would be the way that they would do it. So very cool, and I'm glad to see it being done. I've been gardening a little bit around the house here, Phil, and I am, what I've been doing instead of what my, you know, when I was a kid and was gardening with my dad and my granddad, we did all row farming. You know, I mean, we'd make rows and, you know, we'd put it out. That's not typically the way people are gardening now in their backyards anymore. To save space, what they're doing is raised beds. And so you make a bed that might be 5 foot by 5 foot. Instead of a one-dimensional gardening, which is, you know, a line, you're at least getting two-dimensional gardening because the whole bed is planted. This is three-dimensional gardening. You're going up as well, and so for the same reason, it's even better. So I'm looking forward to seeing this implemented. And the fact it's indoors, that's even better. It's all organic. You don't have pesticides involved. That's not getting out into the environment and messing things up. It's not messing your food up. This is just a good idea.
All right,
I'm on board,
Stephen. I can tell that you've thought about this one and that you're on board. Well, you've not that I needed persuading, but you've persuaded me even further than I already was. To me, I love everything you said. I think it's absolutely right. The application for space is there. One of the interesting discussions you get into when you talk about post scarcity is this idea of a world that has everything in abundance. The one thing that it's hard to imagine this planet having in any greater abundance than it currently does is land, right? I mean, you can float some ships and stuff, but ultimately land will be the one thing that, you know, remains reasonably static. You got virtual worlds, you can go to other planets, sure, but if you're on this planet, you've got about the same amount of space that you have. So it's not a huge issue everywhere now, but as you pointed out, it is an issue in some places now, and it ultimately will be an issue everywhere, that we want to make the optimal use of the space that we have. And this makes the optimal use of the resources and of the space and provides the greatest efficiency. So it's clearly, if not the future of agriculture, it points us in the direction of the future of agriculture. And it's another great example of the kind of using nature as the word that I think I was looking for there was toolbox, okay, which is really what it is, that we're moving away from an older, more quote unquote natural model to a model that is completely in accord with nature, but that improves on it somewhat and that gives us greater benefits as a result. So although superficially they don't appear to have anything to do with each other, I would submit to you that the exercise pill and vertical farming are, in a lot of ways, quite similar to each other.
Throw in the windmill-less wind power as well. I mean, and again, you are using nature for your benefit without costing. You know, without putting a cost on nature, basically polluting or destroying.
Yeah, without violating nature, without making nature, without making nature your bitch. That's actually kind
exactly.
of the point, you know. It's kind of the opposite of doing that.
True.
And that's the trend. Okay, so in the show introduction there on the Speculist and over on or here on Fast Forward Radio, I said, you know, do these all speak to a trend? Well, I think they speak to a couple of trends. The fact that we've stopped SOPA falls into this one too. The broadest trend of all, which is that things are getting better, and that we're not going to. I don't think we're going to allow major impediments to that, particularly when it comes in the form of threats to the basic infrastructure that's driving us forward. And we're getting ahead, as we've talked about, both by coming up with net brand new ideas and by making new kinds of use of things that already exist. And I think each of these actually has a little element of both of those things to it. And that's one of the reasons that I thought all of these sort of worked together. SOPA kind of being an outlier, but it was so topical, especially today, that I felt like we shouldn't miss it.
We don't have time to get into this subject tonight, but it's because it's worth a whole show, Phil. But I just want to throw this out to the folks in the chat room and everything. Check out Recorded Future. Google the term Recorded Future. I think there's something big going on there that we need to talk about maybe in the next show or something.
Well, I'll tell you what. Next week, of course, we're going to have Christine Peterson with us, she'll be talking about the Do-It-Yourself Life Extension Conference, the self-managed life extension. So we're very excited to have her back talking about that program. But why don't we plan that a week or so out, Stephen? That'll be our we'll do that in the future. Maybe we get one of the organizers of that site to come on and talk to us about that. We'll look into that and see if we can do something with that.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, our music tonight is "Got to Go" by Kelly Allen.
"Got to Go" by Kelly Allen. Well, that's appropriate for us here at the end of the program. So thank you for putting that together, Stephen. Thanks to all of our listeners, those who are listening live, everyone having some fun in the chat room. Thanks for being with us. Those of you listening via MP3, thanks for being part of Fast Forward Radio. We'll be back again next week, as I said, with our special guest, our good friend Christine Peterson. Hope you'll be able to join us. And until next time, live to see it.